Blog Talk Radio.
Spectrum technique. Special technique of shadow boxing. Radio. This is coming to you courtesy of Mathis and Raymond, basically Productions. Give thanks to Clausel Mathis and Matthew Long for basically starting up the CMT movement with the CMT Firestorm, our football talk show that we have, and also the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, which comes on every Tuesday night here on Blog Talk Radio with host Matthew Long, the Executioner. And like I said before, you have the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night with Clausel Mathis, Michael Brewer, and also Chi-Town, and also participating in that show also with the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. But right here, right now, I'm calling in. And then I'm about to bring in somebody else on the line. I've got area code 336. What's going on?
What's going on, Jimmy?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good, man. Introduce yourself to the people out there.
Greg Skills. Calling from North Carolina.
All right, all right. Yeah, Brother Greg here has basically been, you know, there with me for boxing ever since, I guess, what has it been, September of 2013, basically?
Correct, correct.
Yeah, with that big fight they had there with Floyd Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez, and then we've been, you know, basically, you know, talk about boxing ever since then.
Yeah,
you know?
10-4, I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, It's very few of us left, the guys that actually love the sport, and they're not just the casual fans that don't appreciate the science of the game. So I don't get to conversate with anybody that's articulate with the science of the sport and just watching two guys slug. Not to say that it's not entertaining, but you also got to appreciate the sweet science of boxing.
Oh, yeah. It seems like, you know, over the past week or so, a lot of people have, you know, basically tried to go at a certain fighter because he doesn't slug it out with opponents and doesn't stand toe-to-toe in these so-called runs around the ring. But we're going to get at that a little bit later on this show. First thing I wanted to pretty much tackle was what was going on yesterday. You had a fight on HBO, and also you had, a fight on CBS earlier in the day. So, you know, I really wanted to tackle that first fight on CBS that, you know, people didn't really, I don't know if many people noticed it or not, but it was kind of like a little good little tussle there between Rick Burns and Figueroa. So I was here to see if you were able to catch that.
Yeah, that fight right there, that was it was an interesting fight. I was just a little curious of it seemed like Omar had him and the referee against Burns. I mean, it was like, from what I saw, and I watched the fight twice, what I saw was both guys were engaging in the clinches and tying each other up. But
right.
Burns was the only one that was pretty much being punished and being warned for it. I mean, not to say that pretty much indicated the outcome of the fight, because I don't really think it did. I mean, to me, Omar just seemed a little bit bigger, it seemed like he had a little bit more on his punches than what Burns did. But I do think that the referee sort of hurt Burns from getting in his groove of fighting that type of fight. You know,
right.
That's just my opinion on it. I mean, because like I say, every time that Burns would hold or clinch, the referee was, you know, warning him or deducting points. You know, I just thought that it was a little ironic because I've seen that on both ends. Omar was doing the same thing too. But still, to me, I think the side was the biggest thing in that fight.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ricky Burns did have a couple of disadvantages going into that fight. From one, he was basically, you know, this was his first fight outside of the UK. And then, you know, on top of that, having that being your first fight outside of the UK, and then it's, you know, against Figueroa, who's basically from Texas, you know, not that far away from, yeah, basically in his hometown. So you're basically having a, you know, you're basically fighting a fight where you're virtually the away team, like in a basketball or football game. It's like, you know, the Dallas Cowboys went to FedEx Field. That's basically what Ricky Burns did in this fight.
Right.
You know?
I mean, whenever you fight a guy where the arena is like 25 miles from where his house is, I mean, it's never good.
Yeah.
And then it was a pro Mexican crowd, you know.
Yeah.
And, but that's pretty much what he expected. I mean, he still had problems making the weight, even though he had moved up in weight. So, I mean, I still just think that Ricky was at a crossroads fight, and he really needed to win, but it wasn't his night looking at the circumstances of where he was at. You know, I think he was a little bit overwhelmed, and as I said again, the referee didn't help.
Yeah, the referee didn't really give him that many breaks in that fight. And, you know, once he was basically, you know, down on round eight, and then they gave away that point in round eight, it was virtually over by then.
Correct.
And it was like, you know, like Paulie said, I mean, the clinches, they weren't like clinches like he was trying to intentionally hold Figueroa.
Right.
It was just that he was just, you know, in there too close and, you know, just trying to, you know, either fight his way out of it or, you know, kind of like stop the offense from Figueroa.
That's
you know
right.
What I mean? And then when you have it like that, you're basically just having that fighter in a disadvantage when he's not even able to do that. You know, there's strategic holding and then there's blatant holding. And what Ricky Burns was doing right there was strategically holding, and the referee didn't allow that.
Correct.
You know, so that kind of, you know, that kind of like stopped things in his tracks for that one. And that basically just derailed, you know, anything that Ricky Burns could do. And for that, we're not really sure as far as what he's going to do because, I mean, he's already faced, you know, Crawford beforehand last year. And he really, you know, he really couldn't do much against Crawford. And now going against somebody like Figueroa, which, you know, that means he really can't beat the elite fighters in the division, whether it's at 135 or at 140 or wherever he goes.
Right.
So he's basically going to be, you know, basically a mid-grade fighter from now on.
And, yeah, but my thing with Figueroa going forward, I think that, you know, as long as he fight the caliber fighters of Ricky Burns, he'll do well. But if he think he's going to get in there with the elite, you know, I don't think he stand a chance. Crawford will beat him, in my opinion. I think if Danny was stay at the weight class, Garcia beat him because, to me, Figueroa can only fight one way, and that's staying
right
on top of you, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, if you look at the belt holders, I don't see him being able to do anything besides land a lucky shot and winning. Skill wise, I just think that all of the guys with the strap, they're a little bit you know, a little bit better than he is skill wise.
Right.
Not to say that
right.
He's gonna be an entertaining or exciting fight, but I don't see him beating anybody with any title holders.
Right. I mean, like, right now, and he's at the 140-pound division, which is, like, most loaded division they have out there right now with, I mean, they still had Broner there at 140, Postal, the undefeated guy from the Ukraine, Peterson, who might or might not stay at 140, Matisse, Provodnikov. I mean, there's still a lot of people out there in 140. So,
right.
You know, I'm not sure if, you know, Figueroa would be a guy that would, you know, challenge those type of people and end up, you know, winning against those type of contenders. But
yeah, I don't see
it. I mean, yeah, we'll see what he does in the near future, but I don't know if they're going to match him up with any of those top guys in the near future and to see how they're going to end up turning out, you know. So that's going to be, you know, something there that we'll pretty much look into. But the other thing that was happening, you know, yesterday or last night, was on HBO, you know, in Houston at Minute Maid Park with, you know, Saul Canelo Alvarez against James Kirkland. I'll say what Saul Alvarez nickname is, but I'm not going to say what James Kirkland nickname is. I just can't do it. I'm sorry. So we go in there, and people knew that it would be a slug it out type of fight, you know, and it was able to go three rounds, and Canelo scored the KO victory over James Kirkland. And my thing was, it was that, I mean, Kirkland is a straightforward type fighter, so it was going to be, it wasn't going to go, we all knew that it wasn't going to go the distance. But my thing was that Kirkland just, you know, curtain, you know, stay in front of Canelo because Canelo is more of an accurate puncher and can actually, you know, set things up. And when Canelo actually knocked out Kirkland, he basically set it up by going to the body first and then later on going to the head in order to score that knockdown. You know, so that basically showed the skill that Canelo had in this fight. So what were your initial thoughts on it?
Well, one thing about Canelo Alvarez that people don't understand, as long as Canelo fights that particular fighter, he's always going to look great. He's going to look like what everybody projects him to be. Canelo, number one, as you see, his hand speed is so much faster than what Kirkland's were. I mean, and his punch and accuracy is so much better than what Kirkland brings to the table. What people don't understand, everybody's going by Kirkland's last fight. If you look at his last fight, he's been off well over a year and a half, going on 2 years when he fought Tapia, the Jersey kid, okay? He had went up in weight to 200 pounds or over. So the majority of his camp, he pretty much had to take the weight off. He couldn't really focus on getting ready for the fight, not saying that he got rid of Ann Wolf to pick up a predominantly new trainer that nobody really knows in the boxing world. So that didn't help him. It wasn't like that he had really went with a named trainer, you know. But I thought he was carbon copy to make Canelo look good. James can only fight one way, and he had no defense. His defense is his offense.
Yeah, exactly. Now we got two more people on the line here coming up. I got 813-482 right now. State your name, where you're calling from.
This is Gary and Nakari from Tampa.
Hey, what's going on, Gary and Nakari? How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, doing real good, real good. You know, just talking about what's going on here with that Canelo Kirkland fight that happened last night. And, you know, Brother Greg here just gave an analysis of, you know, what Canelo is basically all about. Were you able to catch the fight?
I watched it last night with my parents.
All right, that's what's up, that's what's up. So what did you think of it?
Well, I'm not very familiar with James Kirkland as a fighter, but It was kind of sad. He started off really, really strong. He was taking his punches pretty well, but he was really pressing the fight. But Canelo just basically weathered the storm and came back at him, and he wasn't able to recover from Canelo's power, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, and then he wasn't tight enough, so kind of he paid for it.
Right, right. Yeah, the thing with James Kirkland is, I mean, he's mainly an offensive type of fighter. He really isn't, well, he's more of an offensive fighter, but he's not like someone that really is accurate and kind of like measures his punches out all too well, because if he did that, he would be much more of a dangerous fighter than he is. That's why, you know, Canelo was able to weather the storm after that first round and then the first half of the second round and basically, you know, measure up Kirkland and then basically eventually like ended up knocking him out in the third round here. We'll get back to you right quick, but I have another person on the line here, 813-784. So, 813-784, tell us your name and where you're calling from. Let's set the same line. 813-784.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's Matt in Puerto Rico.
All right, then, Matt. What's going on there, Matt?
All right, just enjoy all 2.5 rounds of that that main event.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everybody knew that it would be an all action type of fight. I mean, those two are basically come forward fighters, especially Kirkland, because Kirkland is a come forward fighter, but doesn't really have the, you know, technical skills to make adjustments in the middle of a fight. And so he was basically the underdog in that fight. You know what I mean? So what was your question analysis of the fight in general?
Well, my breakdown of the fight, the first round was slower than I thought it would be with two guys that were punching it out. I think Canelo pretty much controlled the first round. He controlled most of the second round, and Kirkland kind of weathered the storm there and kind of came back at the end, got a second win, took that into the third round, and then got knocked down with an uppercut. And then just after getting back up from the uppercut, that's where he got the right hook that he took to the jaw that put him out. I was hoping the fight would go longer than that. I didn't know if it would be a knockout. My question of Canelo was, now that Kirkland's a B-side fighter. We got to face it. He's a B-side fighter. So it was just the next guy up for him. Was he still going to be able to continue to knock guys out, or is it just what we're going to see with more of the trends when guys move up a weight class or two and, you know, he's starting to go more decisions, or what will it be? So, obviously, he obviously has the power to knock people out, and he obviously got the knockout in the third round. I had him ahead on the cards. Anyway, so he would have won three rounds handily had Kirkland been saved by the bell again.
Right, exactly. Now, going back to like Gary in the car, you're still on the line?
Yep.
Yeah, I see that that you were coming in here and what I really wanted to do since you're on the line is I wanted to get a little bit about, you know, what you're doing as you're a young prospect out there. You recently were in the Atlanta area last month for the exhibition that they had. So if you want to, you could just go over right quick what you were doing there in Atlanta and what you're currently in the midst of doing.
Team USA was fighting against Team China. We won them. We won in the duel. I was battling sickness for the whole camp. I still fought, though. I thought I was going to be able to fight and just be able to tough it out. I did end up losing, but now I am just getting ready for the Olympic qualifier, which is in Colorado Springs. And I'll be going back up to New York to train with Coach Kelly Richardson of Jimmy Boxing. And then after that, I placed in the Olympic qualifier. Then I'll have my spot in the Olympic trial.
Right. Now, yeah. Now, last time you were in New York, you were training there with I think it was not with necessarily Danny Garcia, but with who was it again? I think it was now I had it off the top of my head.
That you were training Ochoa. With.
Yeah,
I was
it was
Ochoa,
Ochoa.
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 Right.
Yeah, Ochoa. Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of like a few weeks before that fight that Danny had with Peterson. They show up there
right.
in the New York area with that. So you had that, and then after that, you were able to go to Atlanta and
went to Colorado Springs first. I went to Colorado
right.
Springs first and trained at the Olympic Training Center with the girls on the national team. And then we went to Atlanta for a week. We were supposed to fight Bulgaria and Canada and China, but those other countries were out, so it was only China.
Right, right. Gotcha. Now, another thing that, was going on is that, since you're basically going through Olympic trials, is that you have, like, a little, movement going on to see if, like, people were able to see if they could, pitch in or help out with your quest to get into the Olympics. Could you go into a little bit with that?
When it comes to any kind of sponsorship or any kind of endorsements or any kind of funding, we're seeking it now, but, with economic times and people just they're not as giving as they normally are, so everything has been private. I've been funding everything so far. But, yeah, we're open to we're open to anyone who's willing to put into her training.
All right, gotcha. So, Gary, what we may do in reference to that is we may have to set something up a little bit later on to where, we're able to put something into an account to where people will be able to pitch in and, either kind of sponsor, give a little money here and there to help out with that.
I'm actually going to get it set up tomorrow.
Okay.
Two of her advisors, and it's going to be set up tomorrow. So anyone, whether it's from local, anywhere stateside or anywhere international, they want to put towards her training or anything at all sponsorship, that they'll be able to do it.
All right, gotcha. Yeah. Once you're able to get that set up, just let me know, and I'll be able to share that on my Facebook page, number one, and then number two on the website that we have, the chcosports.com.
Okay.
I have a boxing section there, so, I'm able to do something where I could, add it in the article that I write as far as, what Nakari's doing and, get people involved with that.
Yes, and we appreciate it, man. And anytime you need her, man, just give us a shout, and we'll be glad, to come on here with whoever and wherever camp we're at. Whoever's in the camp, we'll have them jump in on the air also.
Gotcha. Hey, Greg, is there anything you wanted to add into that?
No, just basically, like I said, let James know where you guys will want the money sent. And any way I could help anybody to achieve their dreams, I'm willing to donate or help them out any way as I can.
Okay. No problem. Thank you. Thank you for your time, Jay. Greg, thanks. Keep on listening. You're going to put us up on mute and keep on listening.
Yeah, all right, no doubt. Let me get that on there right quick for you. Hold on just a second, man. And all right. Y'all just heard it right there. We're trying to get Sister Nakari Jones there on her quest to be in the Olympics, next Olympics that are coming up for the summer. So we're going to be able to get some things done with Brother Gary here to help get that set up to, help her out. So be on the lookout for that over the next couple of weeks or so, and you'll see what you'll be able to do to help out with that. Now, real quick, going back to this whole thing with Saul Canelo Alvarez and his recent win over James Kirkland. I wasn't able to catch this little video clip they had of Ann Wolf there after the fight with Kirkland. Hey, Greg, were you able to catch that?
Well, she was just basically talking about when, James' troubles, when he was in and out of, lockup and how she pushed him, you know, to get to where he was at. That's all. It was just, it was nothing that you haven't heard before. You know,
right.
It's sort of sad that the biggest fight of his career and he goes another direction. And we've all seen what happened with that before when he went another direction and he got stopped then. I mean,
he
can find something in James and he can push him into places that nobody else can. Not to say that would have made the outcome of this fight be any different, because I don't think it would have. I just think that he was tailor-made for Canelo to look good. Oscar and Golden Boy, they knew right what they was doing when they got Kirkland. If you remember, they tried to get Kirkland 2 years ago, you know, as a comeback fight. So it's no different now. James came, he got his payday, and it gave Golden Boy what they wanted. Their Golden Goose looked like a superstar again. So now he's topic of conversation. I mean, I'm seeing already what they're talking about. Him fighting Mayweather again for his last fight, but it will not be a catchweight. You know, I mean, who would want to see that again? I know I would. You know,
no, I mean, I wouldn't either.
Even his trainer Chepo had said in the little interview before the fight, the little fighter segment, how he would have bet his life that Canelo would have beat Mayweather. Then the actual fight, he said, it was like the kid swinging at a piñata at a birthday or a Mexican holiday, how if you go low, Mayweather's high. If you're high, he's low. Just how slick and slippery that Mayweather is. That's what nobody gets him credit for, but everybody calls it running. I mean, I don't understand what running is. I mean, I understand what boxing is. I mean,
exactly.
That's what he does at the utmost, but that's just my opinion of the situation. But, I mean, to me, Kirkland was made perfect for Canelo to look good.
Now,
he has no defense. He came in, he threw everything he had the first round.
Yeah.
From the first round, his punches didn't have anything on them like they did prior. So that right there sort of make me, you know, question his conditioning. You know, I mean, his conditioning, it couldn't have been the best. I mean, to me, I think the majority of his camp spent losing the weight.
Right. That was the early talk then was that, you know, they really kind of concentrated on Kirkland losing the weight instead of him, like, actually having some type of, you know, working on the skills or working on studying Canelo Alvarez and what Canelo was doing in his fight. It was more about trying to lose weight and, you know, get his eating right and that type of thing instead of actually training for Canelo Alvarez.
Correct. In other words, of being a professional, because my thing is, when I look at somebody like James Kirkland, nothing against James, I mean, he's a warrior, right? But at this state in his career, you can't teach James anything new. I mean, because James is going to go back to doing one thing, that's being James. I mean, you got to look, James, he's seasoned, he's been in the game for a little bit. And to me, you can't, it's nothing you can add to what James does because he is who he is. And at this point in time, I don't think, only time he's going to make adjustments is when he's thinking about it. But as soon as he gets punched, he's going to go back to doing what he knows how to do, and that's one thing, that's ball. And that's his Achilles heel. I mean, you can't teach James defense. Not at this state in his career, because like I say, he's a one-dimensional fighter, and his defense is his offense.
Right. And I mean, if you're able to, you know, withstand his punches and his blows, I mean, you'll be able to get to him. It's basically like, you know, it's basically like fighting an older version of a Mike Tyson. I mean, all you got to do is get through his offense. And if you get through his offense, then you'll be able to take him down or take him out. You know, so that's, you know, basically what James Kirkland is.
If you look at Canelo, he was so in control, it was unreal. Even when James was letting off his barrage of punches, Canelo wasn't doing it but catching him. I mean, it ain't like you hit Canelo with anything flush.
Yeah,
I mean, he just had his hands up, and he was just so composed, you know. And at the time, James, it ain't like he was ticking his punches. He was just bombing away. So he spent the majority of his energy punching nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, he was just rolling with the punches that he had there, and then was able to just throw what he had, you know what I mean, and be able to, you know, do what he needed to do in order to, you know, execute here. So that was the thing on that, and like you said, Kirkland was basically a stand in front of you type of fighter. No different than when Canelo faced Fredo Angulo.
Right,
Angulo
exactly.
Angulo is basically
thing.
A straightforward fighter.
Right.
Yeah,
same thing
right there.
Right, correct. And as long as they put him in with fighters like that, believe me, the matchmakers know what they are doing. As long as they put him in there with guys like that, he'll always look good. Every time
yeah.
they put him in there with a slick boxer, he will always be exposed. That's why
yeah.
they don't want to put him in there with a Laura. They don't want to put him in there with a Mayweather. The whole purpose of even mentioning Mayweather's name is because everybody's waiting on that day where Mayweather turns old in the ring. But I don't see it happening, you know, just because
mm-hmm.
he has no bad habits. You know, as soon as they question his legs, he shows you he has plenty of legs left. I mean, and his mobility and his movement is still there. It's not going anywhere. I mean, and that's the right thing to do after everybody had their opinion about last week's showing.
Right, right. And that was my thing with Canelo's fight against Lara, is that, you know, Lara was able to frustrate him, you know what I mean? And I think he really, you know, did well in that fight, just like like Austin Trout did in his fight, you know. I think both of them were able to, like, kind of do well against Canelo. I think with the thing with Austin Trout is that, you know, he was right there in the middle of, you know, in Texas when they had that open scoring in effect. So when you had, you know, after round 4 and then after round 8, they basically gave Canelo a big old lead. There was nothing really that Austin Trout could do from then on.
Right, right,
you know?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, what was that?
I said, I see already what Oscar is saying. You know, he's talking Mayweather, he's talking Cotto. So they'll be
yeah.
eyeing the June 6th Cotto fight, right? But now,
right.
but when it comes to Triple G, he's saying he would prefer to wait 2 years, okay? So if you wait 2 years for Triple G, if I'm correct, Triple G's what, 32 years old? I mean, so you're going to wait 2 years to fight Triple G. I mean, it's like, that's another fight. That's the type of fighter that he wants, but I think he's worried about the fire and power of Triple G because those two
yeah.
have sparred before. I mean, it's like he's Oscar all over again in a sense. It's all about
mm-hmm.
picking the right fight for Canelo.
Right, right. Now I'm going to see if we have somebody else on here. Hold on just a second. I'm going to see. We have 443 on the line.
Yeah, what's up? It's Jason.
Hey, what's going on there, Jason, man? How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Doing good. Just we were just here, you know, dissecting what Canelo Alvarez is doing and how Oscar De La Hoya is kind of like protecting this fighter right here, in that he doesn't really want to put him against who I call Triple OG, not a Golovkin. You know, they don't want to put him in there, you know, too soon against Golovkin. They want to wait 2 years. But what I'm saying is that why don't you have him on against Golovkin next May? I mean, if Floyd Mayweather is going to have his last fight in September, that means that May date is wide open. And
correct.
You have Cinco de Mayo, you'll have that date open, and then there will be no bigger fight that you could put together right then and there than, you know, Golovkin and Canelo, especially if you're going to match Canelo with Cotto in September. know what I mean?
That's probably we're gonna have to wait till September. That's what I think. I think the industry is basing everything around Floyd's decision. Is he really going to leave in September? And I think that's how the industry is moving. The whole industry as a whole, basically Floyd's the payday. So everybody builds the hype off of, you know, he builds hype and he keeps people interested in the sport. That's what they're looking for. So if he steps down, somebody's got to fill those shoes. And it's going to be 3-4 people that's going to probably be vying for that spot. And, yeah, it should be. He should fight in May. I mean, like you said, the date's open. It's money. That's the money. That's the money weekend. That's been the money weekend for the past, what, 3-4 years now? Floyd's been bringing a lot of boxes. Minus Floyd. Take Floyd out of the equation. The undercards. Everything goes on that weekend. You know, and that's been a big payday. We're used to it. We're used to spending money that weekend. You know,
right.
It's becoming it's a boxing holiday, if you want to speak. If you're a boxing fan, you look forward to those the first week of May. The last few years, you've looked forward to the first week of May if you're a boxing fan. So I'm almost sure that they're going to have to do something just to keep the payday coming. They're not going to let a payday go away.
Right.
That's, you know, right. When it comes down to the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, they're going to have to, you know, keep that first weekend of May, you know, up there for boxing because it's like, you know, that's like the biggest date there that they have out. So, I mean, they're already looking forward to what they're going to have to do next year because if Floyd is really set on saying, hey, September is my last fight, then, you know, the boxing world will probably have to see what they could do for May of 2016. And, you know, right now in this moment, I really don't see much of anything else being bigger than Canelo and Golovkin for next year as far as, like, prospects goes, as far as, like, the biggest matchup that could be put together. What do you think about it, Greg?
In my opinion, Floyd isn't going anywhere. Floyd is a businessman, and he says all the right things. Floyd knows how to make you want him even when the casual fans say that they don't. Floyd knows what he's doing, and once he hits 49-0, they're going to throw so much money at him to try to break Marciano's record. So everybody who thinks Floyd is done in September, I got a bridge I want to sell you because he's not done. He's going to break that record, but he's doing it in a way where he can get the most money. He's going to get the most bang for his buck because if I keep telling everybody that I'm retired, right, and mm-hmm. I'm adamant about retiring, that's only going to make you offer me that much more money to fight again. Because one minute you look at Floyd, he says he's going to retire. Next minute he says he don't know. It depends on how he feels. He says himself, he contradicts himself all the time.
Right.
I have a question, though. Who is it left for him to fight to bring the payday? I honestly believe people pay to see him lose. That's what they're paying for.
That's correct. The majority, you know, if you go to a Mayweather fight, you and I both know you've been in there before. 90% of the people are there to see him lose. Floyd's fans really can't afford to come and watch him live.
Exactly.
The majority of Floyd's fans are the pay-per-view buyers, correct? Okay,
yes,
so the majority of people that's coming to watch Floyd is like Ali all over again. They want to see him lose. Okay, so believe me, they'll build another one up, and it's looking like Triple G, right? They're going to build somebody up, whether it's Cotto again for a 160 strap. They'll build somebody up for him to fight, and the same thing will happen. It'll be the same outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I was having this argument the other day about this because I'm a Floyd fan. And I'm a Floyd fan because I'm not a hardcore boxing. I don't know boxing. I'm a hardcore fan, but I don't know the science behind it as much as the next one. You know, so I follow. And I had an argument the other day, and I said, well, if you're disappointed in Floyd's fights, then you should be disappointed in Pacquiao, not Floyd, for not getting
exactly
the fight that you want. Because
exactly
Floyd's never given you that fight. You've never saw that fight from Floyd. And if you did see it, you saw it when he was basically 20 years ago, 15 years ago. You didn't see it for the past 10 years. You haven't seen it. So
right,
if you're upset, if you're really upset about that fight and you wanted to see action or that slugfest like everybody talks about, I say that you should be mad at Pacquiao for that, not Floyd. Then the
correct
next thing, I'll ask you guys, because you both of you sound like you know better. This is the argument. This is the second part of the argument that I threw in, was that I'm 38 years old, so I can't go much further back than the 80s. You know, Sugar Ray was
mm-hmm
my childhood thing, and then Mike Tyson came. You know, I remember Mike Tyson on USA fights. You know, when they had the Tuesday night fights
right
in USA. I remember that. But I was an elementary school kid, though. We had heavyweights. All our movies were heavyweights, Rocky and, you know, et cetera. We don't have heavyweights anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody's used to watching heavyweights. You know, that's the disappointment, that you don't have
right
that fight. Like,
right,
you're not even going to get that fight with the little guy anyway.
Hey,
right,
brother, you are so correct, because you know why? Everybody deemed themselves around the big guys. Okay, but even as much as I love Mike Tyson, right,
uh-huh,
when everybody else was on Mike Tyson, Pernell Whitaker was my favorite, because you know why? I like seeing a real boxing match. I like to see the technical side of it. Not to knock Mike, because I love to see the knockout, but, I mean, you can't learn anything from Mike. I mean, one punch,
no,
the fight is over. You know what I'm saying?
But you know, I'm not going to dispute you. I'm a back up your saying, but I'm gonna say this: if you're a true Mike fan, most of his fights weren't knockouts. They really went 10, 12 rounds. A lot of his fights went a long way. Mike had skills. You know,
well, the early Mike went, like when he fought him and Razor Ruddock, that one fight. Then the other fight, Richard Steele stopped it prematurely. Okay. The early fights, he did. He got some rounds in, you know.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying. But both of them were knockout fights, you know.
Right.
I dispute all of them. Like, you know, I'm a hardcore Mike fan because I was a Mike fan. I was young coming along.
Correct.
And he was the, you know. So, and like Michael Jordan, like how you said, everybody was a Michael Jordan fan. I became a Lakers fan because everybody was with Michael Jordan. I was with Mike Tyson because I didn't really know anyone else. You know, you follow
right
behind what you see.
Right.
But as we move forward, like every sport has moved into more of a skilled position. Everything is more skilled now than it was before. Before it was a brute force way of playing every sport. Home run hitters, knockout boxers, running back from football, you know, it was brute force. Now it's more skill-based. You can't foul in the NBA anymore, so you really have to be skillful in your defense. And, you know, it's
yeah
different. And
yeah,
the same with boxing. What I see now is I see more of a skill set. Like that fight I watched last night on HBO was disgusting. That was the guy Kirkland was disgusting. That was disgusting.
Bro, hey,
right,
brother. I like you, bro, because you know why? I mean, the casual fans, and this is one question that I always ask them. Everybody knocks any skillful fighter, whether it's Rigondeaux, as good as he is, HBO drops
them.
Right, Laura, anybody that has skill, Andre Ward to Mayweather, right? Okay.
Yep.
But they commend the slugfest. They commend the brawl. I ask
mm-hmm
everybody that comes up and they talk about this guy, that guy, the skillful. I say, if your son box, who would you want him to fight like? Would you want him to fight like Mayweather, or would you want him to fight like Arturo Gatti? And all the ones that talk bad about Mayweather, it's funny, I get the same answer every time.
The same laps every time, and the answer's always, I want to fight like Mayweather.
Because they don't want to get hit and be retarded.
Damage.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you want to be able to talk to your son when his career is over. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
They,
and my thing is, my thing about the whole thing about, you know, casual fans and whatnot is that casual fans are kind of drawn into the guy that has the most flash, that's the look at me type of fighter, you know,
exactly.
or anything across the board, because like big fights are kind of like rotated around big stars. Like you have Mayweather now. You have before that you had Oscar De La Hoya. Before that you had Mike Tyson. Before that you had Sugar Ray Leonard. Before that you had Muhammad Ali. You know, so all of those big fights really like shined around big fighters. So yeah, you did have the guys that kind of like slugged it out, you know, every time. Like, you'll have a match like, you know, Alvarez Kirkland, or you'll have something where we have Matisse versus Provodnikov, or a classic like a Corrales Castillo. But these quote unquote casual fans don't follow those type of fighters.
Yeah.
So if I ask somebody who watches boxing or watched the main event last week, who is Ruslan Provodnikov? Most likely they wouldn't tell me who that is.
They wouldn't know.
If I asked them, you know, who is Guillermo Rigondeau, most likely they wouldn't tell me who that is.
No, they don't know. They don't know.
My thing is that, okay, you watch boxing probably once a month or probably, you know, once every
once
3 months, but are you there, or once a year? Yeah, you're right, once a year. But you're not watching it every single week. Yeah, you're not watching it every single week.
The majority of them is talking. I call them, you are just a big fight fan. So every time it's a big fight, you will have a party. You can't name me four active fighters.
Well,
you know, four.
Yeah.
So that's what you always going to have. Like I told this one guy, I said, you are not the reason that boxing is alive today. I said, you casual fans that jump in and out, you guys aren't the reason. It's a reason boxing is a world sport. You know, here in the States, you know, you have basketball, you have football, you have baseball, you have hockey. We have a lot of choices. But when you go abroad, it's either this or that. So therefore, when you see the brothers from England and when they fight, remember the Ricky Hatton days or the Costa Zoo days or whoever.
Yeah.
When they fought, it was a major thing. They were filling up soccer stadiums, right?
The stadium was packed. Come on, man. Like Ricky Hatton, man, this is madness. It's madness.
I hate to cut you off, JB, but for everybody who's saying, nobody's going to buy Mayweather in September, I say, man, you crazy, because I'm going to tell you why. All right? If he fight Amir Khan, all them cats going to cross the Atlantic. They going to come across, and they going to buy, you know, and even though I don't want to see him fight Amir, because I don't think that Amir deserves the opportunity. You know, when I look at, come on, man, look, he's getting ready to fight the kid, the New York kid.
Hold on, man. You mean the dude that fought Pacquiao before?
Now, come on. I mean, I just don't think that what you've done deserves a shot. But to get back to what we was just talking about before, and when you talk about Matisse and Provodnikov's last fight, yeah, those two were engaging in a slug, but they showed skill. If you watch Matisse, look, he would catch and shoot a lot of times. It just wasn't like the fight last night when these two dudes are just
swinging. Well, Kirkland didn't show no defense. Canelo did show something by covering up. But
right.
The fight wasn't like the Matisse fight. If you watch Matisse, I mean, he caught a lot of punches. I mean, he took a few, but he did catch some. So, I mean, you can find some value in some slugfests, right? But the one
right.
like last night with Kirkland, I mean, it was no value with him. He's one-dimensional. And I knew that was going to happen before. Is it the fact that you had to put $900 up to make $100, and I couldn't make any money off of it?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly.
But see,
exactly.
But if you take it, just like you said before, with the casual fan, if you take any sport, any industry, you can even step out of a sport and go into some industry that has people that are popular and people that aren't popular or very popular. And you say when the NBA players pick all-stars or when football players pick Pro Bowls or if a boxer was to pick the best boxers, they always pick people that the majority of people have never heard of. Never the stars are picked. So if you play football, you never say that court, you know, they never say Peyton Manning was the best. It's obvious it's that lineman or this guy. You know, so the purists always see who's really good, but the natural casual fans are actually the ones that they're trying to get to spend the money. Because you, the rest of us, we don't spend that kind of money just on you see behind the Floyd promotion fight. You see behind it. They don't see behind it. You're looking at the undercard. They're looking at who Floyd's fighting and what day of the week it is. That's who they're trying to. It's like they don't have to advertise for you to like it. You're going to seek them out. They got to get the people that and that's what, to me, that's what, like this last, like the last Floyd fight. If you look at all the hype that was surrounding the fight, you look at all the celebrities that attached themselves to, that's what they want it for. You know, they don't want it for you to see the fight. You're going to see the fight anyway. It's for the people. It's really for the people who are the casual fans, the barbershop watchers. You know, the people that argue about you know, because they only argue about Floyd and Pacquiao. They don't argue about anybody else. They don't know anyone else.
Right.
They don't know anyone that exists. I told somebody that Amir Khan was going to be who Floyd fights in September.
And you know what, brother? I think you're right. I really do. I mean, if you look at how it's lining up, they say the Ramadan is running early, so he could get ready for the fight. Business-wise, it makes the most sense. I mean,
that's
why
I'm looking at it.
When you look at
the
NFL,
the thing about it is,
or Amir Khan makes the most sense. Danny got a small base, right? Amir Khan got a big base. So September, I can see him in Amir.
No, because you got to think of it this way. Amir is a character himself.
Right.
But we know outside of real reality, Floyd's going to beat him. We know that. That's not the question here. The question is going to be, by Amir being the character that he is, he's going to have 60% of the casual fans believing he can win.
Listen to all the ones, we had this conversation last week. Look at all the ones that even though they just watched Mayweather and Pacquiao, now they're still saying, oh, I like to see it again with Pacquiao having a good, both arms being good. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You want to see it again? But I feel the exact same way about Canelo. You want to see this again? Man, are you kidding me? Canelo, I mean, he made Canelo look like a novice fighter. I mean.
Yeah, he did.
You want to see this again? I mean, I was there. If it wasn't for the Matisse Danny Garcia fight, that gave me a little bit of action. I mean, Floyd, it was just like, man.
So I have a question. I have a question. This is for both of you. This is a hypothetical question, but this is a question that I pose to everybody that keeps rooting for Floyd to lose, right?
especially when he was fighting Pacquiao, or most of the boxers that he fought. So this is something completely else, especially, you know, when we throw a race thing into the play, right? This is where I'm going at with it. I'll say to white people that you should especially want Floyd to win every fight, because if Floyd loses, all the belts are out the country now. What happens then? The belts are gone.
Right.
Well,
I mean, I know boxing is a world sport, but for the most part, Ali, Frazier's, Leonard's, the belts have been here, which gave them, now the Russians got those belts. You know, the belts are gone.
But here's the thing. Here's the problem with that. And this goes across the board. And here it goes to the point that that Greg was talking about as far as, like, boxing being a world sport. With boxing, you have these fighters that have, you know, been over the past of today that come from other countries that their whole country ties into. For example, either the country or the province they tie into. Like, for example, in Puerto Rico, they had Tito Trinidad, and now they have Miguel Cotto. In Argentina, they had Maravilla, Martinez. They had Maidana, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
England, you have Ricky Hatton. You have Matisse. Yeah, Matisse in Argentina. In England, you have Amir Khan, or you have Ricky Hatton, Kell Brook, and so forth. Or you have people that are in, you know, Germany or whatever it is. But when it comes to America, you really don't have anybody, like, their whole country's tying, like, putting their whole efforts into rooting for a particular fighter in America, especially black fighters.
No, you don't have that until all of the belts are gone. Until it becomes an issue.
And we got about 2.5 minutes left on this show.
Let me say this, and I'm gonna let you go. I talked to a brother last week. He was like 60 some years old, and he was talking about how he was a big Pacquiao fan. I said, man, I said, bro, I said, just looking at your age, it's hard for me to believe that you pulling for Pacquiao. You're not pulling against a brother. So I went back to, I said, you probably remember the Sugar Ray Robinson days when y'all was listening to it on the radio when you was a kid and this and that. So he was in agreement, right? But he still said Pacquiao was his man. So I let him go. I talked to this white gentleman that's about 56, 57 years old. And I asked him, who was he pulling for? He said he was pulling for Pacquiao. Then, you know, the first thing he said, Peyton Manning's only made $227 million in his whole career, and Mayweather's going to make this in one night. I said, so it's more about the money Mayweather's making, or is it more about being a fan of Pacquiao?
It's who's making it.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It's a couple dynamics behind it. Hey, he makes it, and he appeals to a certain generation of a certain group of an ethnicity. Not the whole ethnicity at large, a certain group in the ethnicity.
Right.
You said it earlier. The people that like Mayweather can't afford his fight. So who really likes him? The have-nots.
Right.
The have-nots like Floyd.
But, you know, it's sad that we don't embrace our fighters the way that Mexico embraced theirs, right? The way that England embraced theirs. It's like it's really sad. At one time we did, but that's before all of our time. That was the Joe Louis days, the Jack Johnson, the Sugar Ray Robinsons, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, even Ali, you know. But, like, today it's like a lot of us are hating so much.
Right.
We want – a lot of us want him to lose just as much as everybody else, and we already know their reasons of wanting him to lose. I mean, but that's how it goes. I mean, a lot of us will always get blind.
Yeah, the thing is, with this other thing here, is that they never really – when people say they picked Pacquiao, real quick, when they said they picked Pacquiao, they never really said why Pacquiao was going to win. Never. I've never seen that.
They just want
never really seen that.
They just want Floyd to lose.
And that was the bottom line with that. Now, I'm going to see what goes on here. Now, I see that y'all are still on the line, so what happens here is that, you know, the live show is off, and then we have a little bit of overtime here going on. So people will be able to listen to this show, you know, that goes on overtime a little bit afterwards. So I'm going to extend this for, you know, as long as I can, probably about 30 minutes. But I wanted to really get into this point because when I was watching the fight and I asked people, you know, and I asked a black dude, I said, who are you rooting for in this, Mayweather or Pacquiao? And he said Pacquiao. And I'm like, wait a minute. So you mean you're going to tell me that you're going to root for this dude that you really don't really know all too much compared to Mayweather, who's basically been where we've been through, most of us have been through, you know, to get to the level that he's in, and then you're still going to root for Pacquiao. And he pretty much gave, like, a bad reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was, like, another one, right? Now, this goes to Mayweather's off-the-field antics, which really got me, and Greg knows about this one, is that there was one person in particular that kind of pointed out the stuff that Mayweather did outside of the ring. Now, to me, I'm like this. What you do in the ring, I root for what you do in the ring. Well, what you do outside of the ring, either you rectify it or you don't. If you rectify it and then you basically pay for your price, then you should be forgiven for it. It's no different than Michael Vick. Michael Vick went to jail, did his deed, got out of jail and tried to rehash himself. And even when he tried to do that, people were after him for that too. And the same case goes with Mayweather. And the thing is that a lot of people haven't really seen Mayweather face to face, eye to eye, after he went out of jail, and see how he's acted ever since then.
Okay, I got something for that, right? And we haven't cussed, so I'm not going to cuss, but I'm just going to say that when they bring up the domestic violence or the jail issue, I can look you in the face, look you dead in your face, and say, that is a good lie. That is a wonderful lie. That's wonderful. Because you hold no one else to these standards.
Right.
That's how I know. That's the first thing. And I don't even have to go through their life and point out to other people that they didn't hold to them standards. They have friends they don't hold to those standards.
Right.
So it's not even, that's not even something that I entertain it as an excuse.
Right.
I don't entertain it. And two, the only reason why you said, listen, all you have to do is watch ESPN, watch enough things that don't like someone and understand where they get their arguments from. They watch it too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So ask them to tell you something. All you do when you talk to these people, and it goes with any topic, take away those platforms. Say, all right, look, I know his domestic violence issues. I know that he doesn't do slugfests. Now tell me something else. I know he likes to brag about his money. Tell me something else. Take those three platforms away from him. Like, I don't like those either. But I can tell you 50 other reasons why I do like him that outweigh those. As far as a boxer, because I don't know the guy personally. You know, I don't personally know him to say that I would like him or don't like him. But I do know him from his sporting ability. And that's what I like about him.
But you know what, brother, I hate to cut you off, but see, this is what irks me the most. I mean,
put somebody else on the line right quick.
Okay.
Go ahead, Greg. I just put 813-466 on the line, but continue, Greg.
All right, listen to me. How many times have you guys heard this? Well, what do he do for his own community, right? And I'm like, okay. I said, now, I know for a fact that you guys have been out there on the scene around the fight, whether it's fight week or whatever. So you guys see sides of all these guys that most of the public don't see because they don't never put themselves in that type of atmosphere. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I tell them a lot of times, That guy, when it comes to kids, they'll sign about every autograph, him or Roger, right? Now, Senior, he's a little different. You know, he thinks he's the star, right? Okay, but they get Michael Jordan the same way. But I'm like, do these guys, are they supposed to have a commercial over all the money that they give back?
Everybody that works for them.
Right, I mean, so it's like you're not supposed to okay, you're supposed to tell about every time you feed the homeless or every time you give money to the United Negro College Fund or the Susan B. Comer stuff. You not, if she had did that, then you would have something to say about that. You know, it's like, so I'm like, are you upset because he's not giving you any money? You know, because he does a lot.
Somebody else not.
Research it. If you research
it. You know how I got a different approach to that. Because I got strong opinions on giving back to the community because I'm from the community and I got a pretty decent upper middle class gig right now and I've changed, you know, things around in my life. So I have a different view on giving back to the community because Floyd Mayweather has less than $1 billion, right? If he was to sign over his entire net worth, it wouldn't help but a half of a neighborhood. So him giving back to the community is giving hope. He gives hope to people, meaning that there's a kid right now that's living in a neighborhood somewhere who looks up to Floyd, loves Floyd. And you know what he does? He imitates Floyd by working out all day long and putting in his whole life and training extremely hard so he can be the best boxer that he can be because that's what Floyd does. That's how he gives back to his community.
Right.
Giving physical money is arbitrary. You can point that out.
Right.
I live in Baltimore. Melo has given more to this city than a little bit. And technically, he got basketball courts, he got centers and all of that. But I'm going to say, what has that done for the community? It's hundreds of millions, tens of millions of dollars. But what is that actually? I mean, it's done something. But what he does the most, it gives hope to all these boys that play basketball in the neighborhood. They're now going to college. There's
that's
a group of kids that, because of these guys, they're doing things that they wouldn't be doing because that's
right.
what they did.
Hold on, real quick. 813-466, you're on the line. You wanted to say something?
Oh, this is Nakari.
Oh, okay, you're back? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm back. When I was listening to you guys, it was about 5 minutes ago, when you guys were talking about how a lot of people were saying they're going for Pacquiao, it kind of pained me because we went and watched the fight at a friend's house and they were basically having the same attitude. I was like, it was kind of odd because, first of all, he's an American and we're in America. We're all Americans here. How can we go against another American? Plus, he's an Olympian.
Right.
You always side with the Olympian. It's hard to beat an Olympian. It's just, I didn't understand that, and it was kind of, it pained me to hear a lot of people. It was 60% of people thought that he was going to lose or wanted him to lose. They knew better, but they wanted him to lose. I'm just like, how can a group of people dislike a person that much? Everybody falls short at some time, so you can't hold him, you know, differently than you hold anybody else. It's not right. Wrong is wrong any way you put it. So, I mean, everybody falls short, like I said, and it's just crazy. He's an American. I'm an American. He's black. And these were a lot of black people, too, that were like, no, I'm going for Pacquiao. I'm just like, how could you? Like, really?
Oh, right.
So,
exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to say this. I don't want to cut anybody off, but I'll say that we should. It looks this bad because everybody wants Floyd to lose. You know, that's the real key scenario, is that a lot of people want Floyd to lose, and a lot of people follow people. You know, a lot of people haven't even seen a Floyd fight or even seen them Instagram or Twitter pics of him doing certain things. They're just listening to other people and joining in on, you know, the Floyd Mayweather promotional gig, because you only hear it when he's fighting. You don't hear anybody talk about him unless the fight's happening. You know, they don't care who he beats up or if he gets arrested. No one cares. No one cares when he went to jail because there was no fight.
Right. Because, you know, the sad thing about it is, I hate to cut you off a little, Mike Tyson was a convicted rapist, right, even though I feel the brother didn't do it, right? But everybody loves Mike now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You hate Floyd over accusations of him having domestic dispute. You know, I mean, because if it was as serious as they said it was, I don't think he'd have did 30 days or 45, 60 days in jail. I think he'd have went for a whole lot longer than that. No, and Dakar, you the fighter, right?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh.
Hey, look, make sure we get your information. You seem like an intelligent sister. I'll make sure I help you out as much as I can.
I got a question. Could this Floyd animosity, right, not just be the black thing, the hood thing, the success thing? Could it be our infatuation with the fact that he has a fall from grace that everyone else does?
I think that's part of it. I think that's definitely part of it because when you look,
why do we like Mike now? Because he's broke now. He's like us now. I wasn't
really going to take it back to like that, but I was going to take it back to like when Ali came, right, and he was undefeated, and he basically had his little stint in jail because he didn't join the draft. And then he came back to the ring, and then he had like a couple of fights before he fought Joe Frazier. Now, there were still people there that, you know, rooted for Ali, but a lot of people rooted for Joe Frazier. I know a lot of white cast rooted for Joe Frazier to beat Ali, you know?
Yeah,
right.
And then when that happened, he basically, you know, Ali lost, and he basically, you know, humbled himself. And he, like, you know, said, hey, everybody has his day, you know what I'm saying? Or stuff like that. And that's when more people started to like him, because he took his loss with grace. And part of the reason why some people don't like Floyd Mayweather is because he has never lost. So they can't he lost, or, you know, they can't like kind of like him because he lost and how he would take the loss. When you really want to basically want to go out there to win every single time. You want to be a winner. You don't want to be a loser. You don't want to fall in second place.
Yeah.
So why are you hitting on somebody that doesn't want to be in second place?
I go along with you to a certain extent on that, because one thing that everybody said about the Ali and Frazier fight, they blame the loss to Frazier on one thing, his inactivity due to not going to enlist in the military. I mean, if you go back and if you talk to the old cats who was around then, or if you do the research, everybody said the same thing. Frazier would have never beat Ali if he'd have stayed an active fighter, right? Okay.
Right.
But and that's a form of opinion. But the biggest thing that I think when it comes to Mayweather, just like the brother just said, he made a valid point. They worried about where he's going to rate himself as the greatest of all times. Because if you look at it, what he's doing, right, Shane Mosley said after that fight, he's got to be top five, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, to me, that's the biggest thing with him. They worried about where he's going to go down in the history of the sport. That's another reason why you have a lot of them that wants him to lose, because I don't care what nobody say.
They don't want him to be the face of it.
Right, exactly.
I mean. But think about this. Everyone that we argue about of being the best, right, at almost everything has fell from grace. Tiger Woods fell from grace. Michael Jordan's father got killed, and they said he was doing gambling debts. Remember that?
Yep, I agree
with
that
point.
Mike Tyson, he went to prison. Sugar Ray, he had the drug thing in his messed up eye. I mean, we can just name them. They all fell from grace except for Floyd.
Right.
I mean, we can find a few anomalies here and there, but I'm talking about mega superstars considered the best ever. You know, name one, we don't have any. Even rappers are dead. I mean, and you're never considered the best until. I mean, it goes like this. My grandfather used to say this to me all of the time and tell me to watch out for the tricks, because he said, I lived long enough to see them all play out. He used to say this: what has Malcolm X done in his life to clean up his image since he's been dead? Because when he died, he was considered the apostle of hatred. How is it now that he's so great of a man and he's been dead?
Right.
So what he what they're trying to say is Floyd's bad now, so they have somebody that they need to put him up against. The bad, because there's no one to put up against.
It's like Ali all over again. Nobody.
Yeah.
Ali, when Ali took his fan to not go to Vietnam, he picked up the college kids that had the same views that he had. So he picked up a small percentage of the white people, but the majority still wanted to see him lose. The majority still viewed him as a nigger. The majority still, you know, so you couldn't change that. But it's so funny how he was looked at one way all this time, but now he's the face of
and what
nobility,
has he done
right?
And what has he done? He hasn't changed his stance on anything.
Right. Because, I mean, you
and now he's being celebrated for that. For his stance, he's being, that's what I mean.
Well, there's that, but over the course of time, you know that the people that didn't like him back then, some of them are not still here now. Yeah, they're gone.
Right.
So the ones that were in college, yeah, times have changed. Those that are the college people, you know, they're still around here, you know, the 50, 60, and 70-year-olds. Yeah, they're still here. So that's kind of it.
So is the question... Is the answer to this question saying that the younger group or the next generation, when we're in our 70s, they're going to consider Floyd to be great?
Correct.
You understand? Like we're the argument is with us 10-year-olds right now that didn't get to see, you know, the 5 and the 6 and the 7-year-olds that didn't get to see Floyd fight, but when they grow up. And they become like how I watch Ali fights. I argue Ali principle. I was born in 76.
Right.
I couldn't see them Ali fights. You get what I mean? So
I mean that's right, and you're absolutely right. I mean I watched them all. I mean my mom used to think I was crazy over how much I would watch one fight over and over. You know, I would go back and I would watch all the footage I could find of Henry Armstrong or this fight and that fight. I mean, that's just where I would be a young cat in the barbershop talking to the old guys, and we'd be talking about Max Smelling and Joe Louis, and they'd look at me and be like, son, how old are you? And it made them look at me in a whole different way because I was a student of the game. You know, so...
Yeah, right.
So
and they're going to be
young,
more.
The young kids that today, they're going to base his skills in the ring not on personal appeal, they're going to base on what they see him do. Because all these people, they were everything that the media made him out to be, and he made them all look novice. That's the biggest thing. He made them all look novice.
Here's what's going to be funny. Because we've seen it happen, and you'll see it with the sportscasters now. Here's what's going to be funny, is that a lot of people that are sportscasting now will have their 20 and 30 years in when these 5 and 6-year-olds become 20 and 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds.
Some of them will
still be around. There will be another boxer. There will be a vet era or athlete of any sport of that era. They will be comparing him to the person they condemn now.
That's how it is.
They will be in there saying, he don't have that finesse that Floyd Mayweather has. I've watched Floyd fight.
Right.
I remember back when he fought Pacquiao, and they won't bring up no shoulder. They will bring up a brilliant performance.
Right.
But if
you
just say, where did you stand then? It's like anything that you see now. If you see a person that's 70, 80 years old, 60 years old, they would like to let you know they was part of the civil rights movement.
Right.
Because you can't disprove it.
Anytime that you watch Burt Sugar or anybody, the old school historian, and my hat's off to him. I respect him a lot. But, I mean, it's just something about people adapt to their generation. If you come from this era, you're going to say Michael Jordan's the best. If you come from this era, you're going to say this guy's the best, right? And the younger cats, they just going to have the opinion of what they see because they have nobody to identify themselves to. So all they can go by is the actual footage that they see.
Yes.
Yeah. Now I was pretty much gonna go off of the thing, like, right after the fight, they had ESPN, you had the analysts, you know, you had Joe Tessitore, Bernard Hopkins, and you had your boy, keep forgetting his name, Teddy Atlas, right? Mm-hmm. And Teddy Atlas kind of, like, said that he couldn't put Floyd Mayweather amongst the best of all time because of the timing that, you know, he fought the fighters that he fought. And he said he couldn't put them against the Sugar Ray Robinsons and the Muhammad Ali's and the Sugar Ray Leonard's and so forth. But my thing was is that if you're going to say that about Floyd Mayweather, then you might as well say that for every fighter that comes out after Floyd Mayweather. Because if boxing is going to be the way that it is now, then you can't really put any fighter, no matter how good that they're going to be, amongst the greatest of all time compared to those people.
I mean,
see,
that's
the thing
not
is
even
is
a
that,
fair statement.
It's not fair. It's not a fair statement to me because it's like, well, the thing about boxing back then is boxing was not much of a business then as it is now. So those Sugar Ray Robinsons and those Muhammad Ali's and those Jack Johnsons and so on and so forth, they didn't have any type of choice to fight that, to fight anyone else who was in front of them. There was no, you know, Bob Arum or Top Rank Promotions and Gary Shaw Promotions and Don King Promotions and all of that.
I got a question though, because if you're gonna give Floyd that measurement, can't you measure every other boxer the same way? Like, okay, Mike Tyson fought Larry Holmes. You're going to tell me Larry Holmes was in his prime when he fought Mike Tyson?
We all know that Larry Holmes wasn't in his prime when he fought Mike Tyson.
But listen, this is what I mean. Like, if we go through every boxer, Muhammad Ali was 21 years old winning the championship. He fought plenty of people outside of their prime. That's what made them great to make him great. You got to fight. If you beat Floyd right now and you're a fighter, are you going to say you're fighting Floyd in his prime or at the end of his career? Like,
right.
I mean, he's 38 years, 37 years old. When is it a fair fight?
Right.
Everybody's fighting. He's old. I mean, Floyd's not 25. If he definitely thinks he's 25 fighting 35, he's – I don't understand when they say, like, you know, you fought De La Hoya at the end. Like, come on, man, you fought Pacquiao 5 years later. No, man,
But my thing is, but when Pacquiao fought De La Hoya, after Floyd, they gave him all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
not only that.
Okay. When Pacquiao fought Ricky Hatton, after Floyd, oh, he done something. It ain't about who Floyd beat. It's just the fact that it was Floyd who beat him. Because they gave Pacquiao, if you look at their resumes, at one point in time, they fought the same guy. Marquez, De La Hoya, Ricky Hatton. But why
Shane Mosley.
One carried so much more weight than the other one did. I mean, it's ironic to me.
So.
Right.
Is it safe to say that right now, this country, the majority of the people want to see Floyd lose? If Floyd doesn't lose and he wins 50 fights, because I believe he's going to give these people 50 fights. I don't believe he's going to stop tying anybody. He gives us 50 and then he leaves. If Floyd doesn't lose a fight. Where is he staying in the Hall of Fame? Like, where is he going to stand truthfully amongst the Hall, you know, the people that put you in the Hall of Fame, the sports writers, you know, like, where is his legacy really going to stand?
Well, the sports writers will not give him, to me, I don't think the sports writers will give him the credit that he really deserves.
He deserves. Thank you. I go along with
it's the same thing, like I said, with Teddy Atlas. It's no different than if who's the announcer for Showtime that they got out there? You have Kellerman on one side. Who's the guy on Showtime that they had
Brian
commentating
Kennedy.
On? Not Brian Kennedy. He was with He was with Lampley and Jones in that when they called the fight.
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name.
Yeah. He's a very good analyst, but I don't think he would be somebody that would put Floyd Mayweather amongst the top 10 of all time. You know what I mean? Those type of guys that write are like they're like the worst guys because they always have an agenda, you know, that they carry with them. So if they don't like a certain fighter, they're not going to put them up there amongst the likes of, you know, where they should put them at. Like, they'll have somebody like a Harry Greb above Floyd Mayweather or somebody like who's another good defensive fighter that was, like, way back in the day? I'm talking about, like, way before, Pernell Whitaker or something. Willie Pep. Like, they'll put Willie Pep above Floyd Mayweather or something like that. And I'm like,
if you take the time to go back and watch Willie Pep wasn't really that defensive. He just used his legs to stay out of trouble. I mean, he didn't catch anything. He really didn't slip a lot. He just used his legs. But they deemed him as a master defensive fighter. Shit, he was no Pernell Whitaker. He was no Floyd, but he's a master fighter. But like I say, not taking anything away from Muhammad Ali, okay, they always try to critique who Floyd fought, right? But when I look at Ali, right, okay, and I look at everybody who he's faced, all right, besides Sonny Liston, okay, and I don't really give a lot of credit to Floyd Patterson, because Floyd Patterson was scared to death when he fought him, and he didn't really put him.
Really fought, yeah, he was. He was.
All right. Then I don't care what nobody say, Jerry Corey and Bonaventure, they wasn't, man, come on. They wasn't that tight. Now, I give Frazier, Sonny Liston, okay. I'll even give credit to Ken Norton, all right?
Ken Norton.
And then George Foreman. But when you look at the Wepners, the Ronnie Lyles, and the guys, the Bob Fosters, I mean, come on. I mean, it ain't like that they were that type of fighters. And then you got to also look at, so it's four of them that we can all deem that they were pretty tough, you know. Even Ernie Shaver, he was never a champ, right? They say he could punch hard, but, I mean, you got to look at what he's done in the sport. And then for you to fight Leon Spinks, a guy that's got seven fights, six wins, zero losses, and one draw. Never should he lose to a guy with seven fights. Never. He should have beat himself. I mean, when they want to talk about who you face, okay, I don't see a long line of champions on his resume. And I give him all the credit in the world. I think he's the greatest heavyweight, right? But still, I don't deem a lot of these guys as being champions. You know, they were contenders, and a lot of them were C-plus V fighters. But it's all about who's doing the critiquing of the fighters and the era that they come from.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Ali's resume, and yeah, you do have the Ken Nortons and Bob Fosters and stuff like that. But like you said, with Floyd Patterson, that was one thing. And then, you know, back in the day, he fought before all of that. He fought Archie Moore, and Archie Moore had about 230 fights or something like that when he fought Ali. I'm like, come on, man.
Ali, I don't think he ever fought Archie. You know,
yeah, he did. He fought Archie Moore. He did. In 1962, he did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he fought Archie Moore. Yeah, you all right. But Archie Moore in 62, man, he was done. You know, but
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the guys, not taking anything away from him, I just don't think that
Charlie Powell and Henry Cooper and those guys. I mean, who are they? You know, I don't
right.
really give them the credit of this and that. I mean, I give them credit for the four fights that stand out to everybody. I mean, that's much deserved. But a lot of them, I mean, when I look at Mayweather's record, I mean, Mayweather fought champions. I don't care how you look at him. Diego Corrales was everything that they made him out to be.
Yep.
Except for when he fought Mayweather. After Mayweather, he was still that beast, right? Okay? Even Angel Manfredi. Angel Manfredi, I mean, for the ones that remember Angel, Angel was winning. He was HBO's guy. You remember, he was winning fight after fight, smiling the title, right? All right?
Yep.
Go back. If you look at it, everybody was, they were champions or they were in a position to become a champion. He make them all.
Yeah, they
were.
Yep. Yep. That's true. I mean, the guys that fought me with the fight, man. I mean, you had Corrales, you had Castillo, you have Oscar De La Hoya, Marquez, Mosley, Cotto, all of them. You know, I mean, he's been able to defeat them all.
Like I say, and they were everything that they were supposed to have been until after he beat. And after he beat
right.
them all, man, those guys were pretty much nothing. I mean, you got to make up your mind. Okay, they were deeming Diego Corrales to be like the great Roberto Duran, you know. He was eating right before the weigh-in and all of this, and they made a big thing about it, right? Okay, but
mm-hmm.
that night, hey, Diego looked like a novice fighter. I mean, you know, like I said, his resume speaks for itself. If we go back, you take Manny Pacquiao, you got two fights with Madonna, you got Alvarez, you got Guerrero, you got Cotto. Even though Victor Ortiz, I mean, he had been a champion. Shane Mosley, you got Marquez, Ricky Hatton, De La Hoya, Valdemir, Zab Judah, Shabay Mitchell, Arturo Gatti. All of these guys were champions, every one of them. You know, it's like the whole list. Okay, even, man, we can continue to go down. Chop, Castillo, I mean, all of these guys were champions. Jesus Chavez,
right.
champions. I mean, Hernandez. I mean, I just don't see where the people who he faced, they try to make like, oh, after he beats him, like they wasn't for real. They had to be for real if they was wearing the strap.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing is that you had
Zab Judah. And remember, Zab Judah would have been the undisputed welterweight champion if he didn't mess up against Baldemir, you know, in that January of 2006.
Okay, but
so,
like I say, speaking of Baldemir, okay, he beat Baldemir. He beat Gino Hernandez, Justin Juco. I mean, if you name it, he beat him, you know. I mean, and nobody, they didn't give him the spot. You know what I'm saying? He took it. Like I say,
yep,
tell me somebody that he didn't face that were at a certain point in their career, he beat them all. Diego Corrales, he was 33-0 when he faced him, right?
Yep.
He beat him. I mean, come on. Diego was everything that they said he was. And I'm going to tell
exactly.
you the one that, to me, that was an interesting fight was the Emmanuel Gustafs, you know, because Emmanuel was so animated, right? And
yeah.
they made it a fun fight, even though Floyd picked him apart. But, I mean, it was a fun fight to watch.
Mhm. Yep.
But I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what they want. Like I said, man, who do y'all want them to fight? I mean, y'all want them to fight Mike Tyson? You know who you want
yeah,
them to fight?
Yeah, somebody. It's like they want them to fight. They want them to fight Golovkin at 160. And the thing is that Mayweather don't even walk around at like one. You know. Anything above 151. So it's like, how you going to have
right.
them try to get up to, you know, 155, 156 when he can't even
right.
really walk above 151? You know, he barely was able to me, he was barely able to make weight to fight Canelo. You know, so
right,
he had to, you know, go up to make weight to fight Canelo, and then Canelo was going to go into the ring at, like, what is it, 167 or whatever it is, you know, to fight him. And, you know, it's like, what else can he do? So that's why I'm like, he might as well just, you know, take his 49th fight and have all of these other guys, you know, fight on his undercard, like those other couple of fights he had beforehand, and just ride off into the sunset. You know, whether they try to give him millions for the 50th fight or not. Like, he really should intend to have his 49th fight be his last fight. Because there's nothing else for him to prove. There's nothing else.
I don't see that.
You know what I mean?
Yes, you're right, but I don't see it happening. I don't watch. They gonna pay big money for that 50th fight. And it would surprise me that they try to pay him for a two-fight deal, which that would be 50 and 51. And
yeah.
Because you know why? As much as they want to pay him, a lot of them want to see him lose, too. You know?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It's one of those things. But, man, I'm going to tell you, you're going to do it again next Sunday. We're going to do it every Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do it every Sunday here. We got, you know, the next thing coming up with, you know, like I say, Triple OG against Willie Monroe Jr. coming up on the 16th. So we're going to see how Golovkin performs again, you know, for that fight. So,
hey, what did you think about the McDonald fight? Did you watch
which
that
one?
Fight? The McDonald, Jamie McDonald, and the tomato fight. You didn't watch
I didn't
one.
Catch
that
one.
That was a CBS fight. Yeah, that was an interesting
fight. Oh, that was
fight.
The one before.
Yeah,
I missed that one before the Burns fight. I missed that one.
Yeah, it was a good fight, but it was you gotta be let me see. You gotta really watch that fight close to score it right, because looking at it, Kameda looked like he was winning, and the first three rounds he was, because he dropped him in the third.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, McDonald had he went back to taking advantage of his distance, and he used his reach advantage. He had like a 7-inch reach advantage.
Okay.
And then he pretty much outboxed him. And they came down to that final round. The 12th round was big. And he took it in the 12th. But it was a good fight to watch, and it was a very technical fight. You really appreciate that one. If you get a chance to pull it up and check it out.
All right. Yeah, I'll see if I can
see what your opinion was on it.
Yeah, I'll see if I could do that one and then see what I would do as far as having an analysis on it, and maybe, you know, post it on the website, the chtonsports.com, and go to the boxing section and kind of like put a little review of that fight. So I'll see if I can check that out, and then probably write on it a little bit later on in the week, though. But I'm going to see if I can like close this show out. I would like to thank all of the people that called into the show and all that listened to the show. We'll see you same time next Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And remember, boxing is all about, you know, hitting and not getting hit. You don't necessarily have to stand and trade. All right? So I'll see y'all next week.
Thank you.
All right.